Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. A lot of you are holding on to join our conversation. We'll get those calls when we come back. But first, we've got to go to WEAA Traffic and come back to your thoughts. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Marlene and Stuart Greenebaum Cancer Center, an NCI-designated cancer center providing research, treatment, and education to further the prevention of and cure of cancer. Online at www.umgcc.org. Or the number for more information is 1-800-888-8823. In studio with my co-host, Anthony McCarthy, who's host of the Anthony McCarthy Show right here on WEA every Friday at 5 to 7 p.m., but not this week because it's Christmas Day.
Not this week. It'll be Christmas.
And you'll be preempted by
I think they'll
gospel.
Have holiday and gospel music. Yeah, it'll gives us a little break.
It does give us a break. I'm looking forward. And tomorrow night, by the way, before we jump into the phones, I'll let you know that we have a Christmas Eve special here.
That's right.
On the Mark Steiner
Show.
It's
going to be great.
We're going to have Ed Polacek from 5 to 6 p.m. With some great music. Choral sounds and great old Christmas songs. Good conversation with Ed. And then at 6 o'clock, Leah Gilmore joins me with a lot of blues, gospel, jazz, Christmas sounds. And it should be a wonderful 2 hours to help us get into the right spirit on Christmas Eve.
That's right.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go right back to the phones. Everybody has held on.
Yeah.
Let's
no
get
one.
Their calls.
I mean, all the lines are lit up, but this is exciting.
Gary, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and happy holidays to all you guys.
To you, too.
I chimed in, or I turned on, when you guys were talking about the prison industrial complex.
Yeah.
I have a vested interest there. I have my oldest son in federal prison.
Oof.
In South Jersey, and I could go on, but in the interest of time, I'm going to keep this very short.
Okay.
And first of all, I recommend highly on this subject the book by Randall Robinson, The Reckoning.
Well, it's a great book.
Where he talks, Mark, you can tell the other folks. And by the way, great performances on Voices of People's History a couple weeks ago. I really loved being there with you.
Oh, thank you.
But on a serious tip, I'll never forget a story from the Northwest. White gentleman who was in jail for something. It may have been manslaughter. He did X number of years. This was in the time when folks could get an education while they were in prison. He took advantage of that. He actually became a warden.
Hmm.
And, you know, when you get these stories from the inside, I mean, obviously they know the whole deal from the inside out. And I will never forget the story that he said. He said, "You want a more vicious animal? Well, then put that animal in a cage. And that animal will come out of the cage so much more vicious than it went in."
That's right.
And, you know, that's just least common denominator common sense. Right? It tries to negate that in any way, shape, or form, or being, at the very least, disingenuous. And, again, you know, I have a vested in. My son's not going to get out for 2.5 years. And if these folks are guilty, you know, if he can't come, if he can't pay his debt to society, he can't at least freaking vote, you know, what are the crimes of, the corporatocracy, as John Perkins would say? You know, theirs are much more heinous effect. Millions, billions of people.
The whole idea of incarcerating large numbers of Americans for so many years is just insane. I mean,
in the interest of time, I'll just go ahead and let your other callers chime in. And kudos to all you guys on different levels. Love you all, and take good care.
Have a good
take
holiday.
Take care. Have a great holiday.
But
good
know,
luck
Mark,
to your son.
It has become part of our culture to incarcerate. And to, you know, we elect politicians who talk tough about incarceration because, you know, people are afraid in their neighborhoods. People speak to people's fears, not to their hopes and their aspirations. And when you start talking about the hopes and aspirations of people who have made bad choices, committed crimes, done their time, and now want to become part of their community, people kind of just... I don't want to overstate it, but I'm telling you, I hear it. You hear it when we're out in the community, and Mark promotes this idea. You got to think bigger. You got to think smarter. There are things that are working. Let's reintroduce our brothers, our sisters, our mothers, our fathers, our sons, and our daughters back into the community. People push us back. There's a fear there. But we better make, as the caller said, we better make this a priority. Or we're going to keep doing the same thing, getting the same results. And that's people going back to jail.
And there's got to be a major reform on many levels. And part of it also has to be jobs.
Jobs. Oh, without question.
One of the biggest ways to keep families together and keep people in the lives of their children is jobs. Mm-hmm. People having a decent job, making a decent wage with benefits, health care, and a way to get a roof over your head. That's what builds safe communities in the long run.
And Mark, you know, I know we have a bunch of callers, but you know what else? I think when we... As Donnie said, and you mentioned in the last hour, when we start celebrating families,
yep.
When we start celebrating, because when people are together, and I'm talking about all families, but when people are together and they're committed, they're married, or they're in a committed relationship, it doubles their income. They're more focused on building a life together. They're more focused on making sure their children have opportunities. When we start celebrating family, it only makes us better. It only makes our communities better. Instead of putting all these hurdles in people's way to build those strong relationships and families.
Folks, what do you think? 410-319-8888. Stephen in West Baltimore, you're on the air.
Mark.
Welcome.
Good evening. This is Stephen A. and all your guests who I do know. And I formerly about 20... over 25 years ago, worked as an intern at WJZ on Evening Magazine.
Okay.
Even at that time, being an honored graduate of UMBC, I was told in the television business to be associate producer, you have to be white or a black woman. Hmm. There was no 45 around to intern at. There was no 54. So it was just the three major stations, and black males in particular, and black people were shut out the business. And I said all that to say this is being over 50 and been an investment banker, starting the first minority control investment banking firm with Alex Brown. And,
oh, yeah, I know.
And
who
in
you
the
are.
Insurance business. Mm-hmm. I'm saying to you guys is we don't have the will to vote in new people. Mark Stein and your others, you'll go to the same fundraisers for the same people politically every 4 years before.
I don't, because I don't go to people's. Right. I don't go to fundraisers because that's not my job. But anyway, go ahead.
But you know what? No action is action. When we don't do anything, we are duplicit in what happens. Let me give you an example quickly, and I'll get off. Baltimore, New York City. Last week, I think Bloomberg put like 15,000 people to work that didn't work for the city to help move the snow.
Right.
Why can't we take rainy day money and put some people who have been incarcerated, who have problems with recidivism, to work? The $2 billion that we got on the stimulus was just used. It was just used to keep the people in place in the state bureaucracy that were already here. And most of them are predominantly white. As Kanye West said, and Moynihan, the senator, they don't care about us. And they have a benign neglect, as the former United States Senator said, and that the problems can be remedied. But the mental health piece, as you say, McCarthy, how can a grandmother or mother let a son come back in the house when he's got mental issues
mm-hmm.
that the state institutions have never dealt with? All the money that human resources gets at the 1 through 12 issue. Guess what? You got schools like Marshall, Thurgood Marshall. They never have anybody from mental health come from the state there. Where is the money, and why is not the money, if you talk about the front end, The front end is not being used for any mental health resources.
Well, the reality is that the way we spend money in government makes no sense. I mean, and what you're saying is correct. I mean, I think that people, we don't put mental health resources in our schools. And the reality is that if you grow up in certain inner city neighborhoods as a child, and I've said this for a long time, there are a lot of therapists who agree that young people in many of those neighborhoods suffer from what's akin to post-traumatic stress disorder, having to live in the life the way they have to live life. And we don't take care of that. We don't deal with that. We don't address that. And it has to be addressed. You know, we don't care about how many kids are not fully capable mentally because of lead pain poisoning. We don't address that. So, and those things are all very real. And I think that what you experienced in your younger years on television was very true. I think that people, I think that white-dominated industries are fearful of smart black men. I think that's real. That is, and still to this day, that's
still
not gone.
To this very day. Still to this very day.
And I think that is a threat to many people.
You know, Mark, he said something very innovative in his remarks, and he talked about a lot of subjects. But he talked about, and this is why I get frustrated sometimes, and I think a lot of our elected leaders think, oh, you're just bitter, or they think that there's always some motive behind being critical. And I don't mean to be critical, but when he was talking and he said, why didn't we think, like Bloomberg did, let's use some of these dollars, put people to work right before Christmas. Put people to work. That was an idea I mailed to some people that I know in city government.
Uh-huh.
I said, you know what? It's the holidays. People are trying to find money. Put out a call. Bring some men and women. Clear some of these alleys. Clear some of, you know, because sidewalks, because market was needed all over the city. And when you talk about building goodwill, and I was told, do you know what how involved something like that would be? Well, Bloomberg made it happen in New York. Why can't we think real quick and innovative, and we don't have to reinvent the wheel because people are doing really creative things? And we got, like the caller said, Mark, we got stimulus dollars that really, as he said, are going to prop up. And I'm not being critical because right. I think you have to invest in the businesses and infrastructure that have been investing in your communities, in your city. But a lot of those dollars are going to people who are already involved in the system. The developers who are already involved in the system, the banks that are already involved in the system, they're not going to the small business owners. They're not going to these innovative nonprofits and organizations and employment. It just doesn't happen.
Government doesn't think like that. Bloomberg, for all the things that you might say about him and the things I made.
And there's a lot we can say.
Critique I can make of Bloomberg. The thing is, he does not come out of a government bureaucratic mentality. He comes out of a world of business where he says, we're going to get something done. We're going to do it now. Let's just do it. That's part of the difference, I think. He doesn't think that way. And the other thing is we don't think creatively. We don't think creatively about it. Why can't stimulus dollars be used to take a neighborhood, rehab the homes, put the people in those neighborhoods to work rehabbing the homes, create hoop houses, parks, urban agriculture, do things in a completely different way? I mean, I'm one of those people who thinks
God,
you should.
I wish you would run for mayor.
We should. I mean, people should. You know, this city could be a city of rivers. If we dug up all the concrete to cover the rivers in Baltimore, we could be Venice of the East. It could be an incredible. We could change the way the city is, but it would take a totally different way of thinking about what city living is and how to spend our money. And we're afraid to do it. People are stuck in the mold. When you ask elected officials sitting in this room, and you ask questions like that, you can't ever get a response because it's like you're speaking a different language sometimes. 410-319-8888. Maybe nobody will ever come back in the show again. Estella, you're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen. How
welcome.
Are you?
Welcome.
You have some of my favorite guests there. But anyway, I want to go back to talking about the black youth and what can be done. Oftentimes I hear too many radio talk shows and I don't hear any solutions. I would like to have some of you to get a cadre of people to come on. There's been so many important topics that you've discussed this evening and with the callers calling in. And there needs to be some type of way to come up with resolution instead of always being in the problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's some of the best people to help with these resolutions, particularly about the black males, are the black males themselves. You'll be surprised at what these kids can tell you. And what they think. And once they buy into a program, they would start believing it, and they would implement them. Another thing that it just discouraging to me for a 14-year-old to be taken to the precinct from one of our high schools, and they just turn them over to the parent.
Yeah.
And the parent does nothing. There must be more stipulations to the parent, mandating from everybody else, and we just have to work this thing out as a group. But we need to now, instead of just rehashing the problems over and over and over again, we need to be coming up with solutions, and solutions. And I'm in my car, and I'm almost home, so I would like your feedback.
I deeply appreciate the call.
She was one of our awardees, Teacher of the Year. She's a dynamic, Estella, the woman who's just called in, a great educator.
Dr. Ingram.
A great educator in the city. Mm-hmm.
I think that we do have to start talking about solutions. I think that that's part of the thing that media has to start doing, which is not just highlighting the salacious, you know, and Tiger Woodsing us to death.
Ugh.
Yeah, it is. The story is a celebrity. We need to cover it, but not ad nauseum the way we're covering it all the time, 24 hours a day. And we need to start focusing on places where things do work. I mean, that's what we don't do. And we need to start asking, as we try to do, our elected leaders, why aren't we trying things a different way? And we did here when Paul Graziano was in this room, and we talked about our housing commissioner, and we're going to continue to push the idea, how are you going to spend this money? Is it all just going to go to developers? Or are we going to think creatively about how to change the nature of our city by spending money in a different way? And that's what we have to do. I agree. I think we have to find solutions, and we have to use our airwaves to find these solutions. So I'm committed to that. And Dr. Ingram, why don't you give us a call and help us figure out how to do it? We're glad to have you help us think that through. 410-319-8888. Let's see. A lot of people holding on for a long time. Tony, you've been holding on forever. You're on the air.
Hello. How you doing?
Well, hi, Tony.
Good. Okay. I just got into town not too long ago and waiting for my ride to come and get me. So if it sounds kind of noisy, please forgive me. Okay. Now, I'm originally from Baltimore, and I just came back home. I'm a person who is, I have glaucoma, and I'm an actor, and I've done some stuff in Virginia. I've even done some stuff here in Baltimore before I moved to Virginia.
Okay.
And as an African-American male who's from Baltimore, and I get so tired as a person who has a disability, but I'm not disabled. And I get so tired of hearing that the young lady called in early and she said, the reason why you don't hear a lot of females calling the show because they're working. I get so tired of the media way of portraying females as being so much greater than men. And I was talking to a young lady from Baltimore. I was interested in having a relationship with her. She told me that I see your career going. You got your CDs going. You're doing your commercials. But I like Bad Boy.
But so what's the point? I mean,
I guess my point is that there are so many good things that African-American men are doing, like myself, but we get turned down because we're not, quote-unquote, in the streets. We're not in the jail systems. We're out here trying to make a dollar. We're out here trying to do something that's positive. And we, meeting myself, I don't get that support from African-American females. I'm either too nice, or I haven't been in jail, or there's always something, but the media portrays African-American females as being such higher power than men. But I'm finding females that don't want me because I'm too nice.
Okay.
I'm out here trying to make a living. I'm out here, you know, I'm either too pretty or because I want to look nice or
right,
I wear nice clothes.
Right.
There's always something. It's like, come on.
I don't think anybody can kind of take a broad brush and kind of paint every person, every black woman, every black man, every white woman, every white man with one brush saying, this is how everybody is. We all have our kind of personal issues. I'm not sure I agree that the media portrays. Well, there is some issues with that. I think there are some issues with a negative portrayal of black men in media, and I think that's there's no doubt about that.
And certainly, we have a culture that seems to glorify Mark. Whether we're talking about African American culture or themed movies, where there are men who are. Who aren't as hip and who, I mean, there is an industry that really is built on black women who are successful not wanting black men who aren't thug-like, or I mean, every movie that comes out, that's the way black men are portrayed.
The other part of it is growing up. Any man growing up, any man, heterosexual man growing up, always spend part of his time growing up going that the girl doesn't like me because she wants somebody a little edgier and a little better. Mm-hmm. That's always part of just growing up and changing. That's the nature of life, you know, and then that's not with everybody. I mean, it's part of.
But the culture does feed that perception.
Of course, the culture feeds it. You know, and I think that. But
it's not a problem I have, but but it certainly I can see where the young man has a point about.
Let's go back to
living up to expectations.
How about that? 410-319-8888. Andre, you've been holding on a while. You're on the air.
Yes. Good evening, guys.
Thanks good evening.
For accepting my call. I really listen to you, and I like what you're doing. I wanted to briefly chime in on the thing with the ex-offenders. I'm an ex-offender myself for almost 20 years. And one of the problems I faced in coming back into society was trying to support my family and do it legitimately. And ultimately, I stuck with it, and I kept fighting and kept fighting and kept knocking on doors and kept knocking on doors. And, you know, it was a lot of doors that were shut to me, but I did keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually those doors did open. But I also felt like, you know, that this whole system of the way that we treat people who do come out of prison is very troubling, because oftentimes I felt like I was being treated as though I came down from Venus or something, because, you know what I mean, I'm a felon. And I wanted to know that eventually, if I serve my time, then I come home, I also have this badge that I'm wearing for the rest of my life.
Right.
And trying to get doors open up to me. And I think that this whole system within itself is very unfair, and that we do need elected officials who will actually talk about the disparities and the utter poverty that is causing within our community, because everyone who comes out of prison, you know, don't want to go back to prison, don't want to commit crime, they just want to take care of their family.
And what are you doing now?
I'm an executive chef here in Baltimore, and one of the things that I do now is, you know, when someone comes in, you know, I talk to them and, you know, and make an honest assessment, you know, about hiring a person based upon their skill level
right.
and their willingness to train, you know, and just because you have that conviction on your record doesn't mean that you are less than, or that you don't want the American dream also.
Andre, I'm glad you held on and got
dynamic,
through.
Dynamic, yeah.
I think that we really have to take to heart what Andre is saying. I mean, we do not help men and women coming out of prison, and or in terms of just getting people to work and to jobs and becoming stable citizens. And we have a world here where we lock up people of color in this country at ridiculous rates for crimes often that don't deserve long prison sentences, and people are given those sentences anyway. And we just have to change the way we do it. It's a very tough thing. Oh, you're being liberal. You're being, you know, not tough on crime. What does it mean to be tough on crime? You know, I mean, I think that we have to change the way we think. And I think that Andre has put his finger on it. And I think that someone else called in earlier, you know, it's true. I mean, a lot of people, one of the burgeoning industries in any poor community is hair. And the fact that ex-felons can't get jobs being barbers or beauticians makes little or no sense.
But Mark, can you imagine if someone actually stood up in the legislature and tried to change that? They would have a fight on their hands.
They would.
People
have to. Probably, people have to organize politically from below to make things happen.
That's right, and it's got to start in the right place and move, because power moves. And when people see that you have a movement behind you, or it's not always just the righteous win. You got to have some movement behind you. Then people who are in political decision makers begin to pay attention to
right.
you.
Right. I mean, everything – this is an aside. We're going to take a break. No, we've got some time. But there was an interesting article today's paper about Guantanamo and the number of people who was held in Guantanamo in the prison who did nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing. A Sudanese journalist in Guantanamo for 7 years. And now these guys coming together and formed an organization to expose what happened to them in Guantanamo. We'll do that after the first year. Maybe we can get some of these men
show.
On this program. 410-319-8888. Nia, you're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening,
Thank
Nia.
Thank you so much for accepting my call. My name is Nia Miata. I'm the Neo Soul Nina Simone, and I host a talk show on Blog Talk Radio, which is an internet radio source, and the name of the show is called Goddess Talk Live. And I found that as I listened to your show, Mark, and also Anthony Queen told me to tell you. She said hi.
Oh, okay.
And as I listened, I didn't hear my sisters. I wasn't able to connect with my sisters. So I'm starting out on internet radio, and I've been on since July. And what I'm finding is that the healing process is really beginning to take place between our brothers and our sisters. And I'm just not talking about black people. I'm talking about people of all nationalities. The conversations are being started, and the dialogue is wonderful, and the healing between the genders is so beautiful. So I just wanted to thank you guys, because I'm a product of Morgan State University, a graduate of the telecommunications department, 92, cum laude, Morgan, yoo-hoo! And I'm just so thankful to you gentlemen for being able to inspire women like myself to say, you know what, I shouldn't have to necessarily go to these gentlemen to get affirmation. I can do that for myself. So thank you so much. And the work that the people in the community are doing as far as ex-offenders has been amazing. I just want to shout out Catholic Charities and Maryland Reentry. So thank you so much, gentlemen, for accepting my call.
Thank you,
Nia. Thank you for stepping out there and filling a need.
The other part of that, there is so much on the part of a lot of men, sexism in this world.
Oh, yeah.
People fearing strong women, people fearing women who are taking hold as leaders. I mean, one of our earlier callers said, I don't want to work under any women. I mean, I find that troubling. You know, I mean, that we need leadership coming in all forms in the society, from women, from men, from gay people, from straight people, from every culture in this corner of society, if we're going to be a whole society. And if you can't take leadership from a woman, then you've got a problem.
You got a real problem. But I think that what we have to do is listen from where that's coming from. And there are real serious, as Nia said, there is a healing that must take place, not just in the African-American community. But, Mark, like you said, there is a sexism that is ingrained in us. We're taught as boys, I think, that we are entitled to things that women and girls are not entitled to.
Right.
And if we are going to be a whole society, we've got to admit that and shed that. But too many people seem to want to hold on to that. I don't understand this idea that female leadership is troubling. I don't get that. I mean, how many mothers have led our households? How many mothers have pushed down the brick walls that have kept so many of us back? I don't understand this idea that female leadership is troubling.
Come back to your calls in just a minute. 410-319-8888 is the number here. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop by one of its 7 branches or go to mecu.com for more information. We'll be right back to all of your calls, and Anthony and I will be happy to talk with everybody. We'll be right back. As a WEAA listener, we hope you enjoy our programming and our ongoing efforts to improve. Part of that process is to survey listeners like you to get your opinion. To participate in the survey, visit our website at weaa.org and let your voice be heard. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I'm here with my co-host, Anthony McCarthy. You can hear every Friday here at 5 to 7 p.m., but not this Friday because we are preempted for
the holiday
programming.
Christmas programming. Mm-hmm.
But you need to join us tomorrow night for our Christmas Eve shows, which are just going to be phenomenal, and 2 great guests, and great music, and great conversation, and a way to relax and enjoy yourself on your way to whatever you're doing on this Christmas Eve. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go right to the phones. And Johnny, you've been holding on a long time. You're on the air. Hi, Johnny, you there? Johnny, you there?
Yes.
Good. You're on the air.
All right. How you doing?
Good.
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Wanted to touch on something a gentleman said earlier in the broadcast about gentlemen being or people being incarcerated. And what was interesting that he said is if you want the animal to be more vicious, keep them locked up in a cage. And I saw a documentary last night on Animal Planet, and they were doing a study on why, like, leopards or big cats attack people, or animals in general do. But they use mink because it's hard to do big cats. And anyway, they had mink that were separated in cages, small areas. They only were able to be in those cages. They raised them there. Then they had others that were able to move and navigate throughout different areas and where they were being raised. Well, however, the behavior in the actual mink that were raised in that small confined area became repetitive. And that's exactly, I hate to say it, but it's just the same thing that's happening in us as people. You know, you put people in these conditions that aren't healthy for us, mentally, physically, in any kind of way, and then you're going to start seeing that recurring behavior over and over. It's the same principle, and I mean, we got to change it. We got to do something.
No, you're right. I mean, I think we make prisons to be animal pits. You know, you take all the education out of prisons. You take all the training and vocational training out of prisons. You take prisoners used to be allowed to go to college. They can no longer get the grants to go to college while they're in prison. And what happens is, you know, everybody keeps complaining about young boys in the street wearing pants down below their butts and showing their underwear. Well, where does that come from?
Prison.
And what we've allowed to happen because of no jobs and the destruction of industry, which has destroyed families in poor communities across this country, that prison culture has taken over the streets. It's taken over the what I call the ghettos and the hollers, the hood and the hollers. It's taken over the poorest places of our country. It's become prison cultures. Happened on Indian reservations, too. It's happened in Appalachia. It's happened in inner cities of Baltimore, Los Angeles, New York. Whether it's Latino, black, white, whatever it is. And I think that that's what's got to be stopped. And we can stop it if people have the wherewithal to want to happen.
And it's got to come from various levels. It's got to come from government, but it's also got to come from our faith institutions. It's got to come from inside those communities. You know, it's really something when you think about, Mark, in a lot of the neighborhoods in our city, in a lot of inner cities and urban areas around this country, people live by prison rules. When you come out, when you go in, who you speak to on the street, who you don't speak to on the street, the violence and the guns. And we live by what is prison culture that has taken hold, and who runs what corner, and you better not go to that corner, you better not park there. There are gang symbols written on houses and fences letting people know what line they can cross and what line they can't cross. It's really, it's troubling, but we can fix it. There are communities that are fixing it all
right
over America.
We can fix it.
We can fix it.
410-319-8888. Let's see who's been holding on a long time. Wallace, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Wallace.
How you doing? Yeah, first of all, I'm a loyal listener at 88.9 and Mark Steiner.
Great.
I commend on
thank you.
Commend you for what you do and, you know, keep the show going. I'm just going to comment on, you know, about some of the comments I've heard. You know, I myself have been in prison on a stretch of time, and, you know, I just want to give someone some hope. There is hope. There is hope. You know, going back to prison, using drugs, being homeless, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there was a decision, I was in a program through Rose Street Community. I don't know if you know Mr. Clayton.
I was there with him before it started when we both sat on the corner facing down the drug gangs together.
Right.
I know him very well.
So, you know, Dr. Clayton, I call him Dr. Clayton because he'll fix you. You know, and he fixed me. And I cleaned the streets and alleys of Baltimore City for $20 a day. You know, and then one day he would always say in the morning, in meetings, get yourself a vision or someone will have one for you. You know, and it didn't really hit home until one day him and I was riding the truck, and he said, asked me about when I'm going to get a job. I said, I'll get a job at a warehouse. He said, no, me and Bob are going to send you from the Able Foundation, Mr. Bob Emery, from the Able Foundation. You're going to electrician school. I said, I don't have time for electrician school. But I'm glad that he forced me to, because I am now a successful electrician.
Congratulations, Wallace.
And, you know, and there, like I say, there is hope. And, you know, and if anyone is listening, you know, the Able Foundation at the gallery on the 23rd floor, Mr. Bob Emery, they've been wonderful to me. You know, it's like a black thought, an angel. I've been in the newspaper, not the police blot, except in the histolatory, meeting Bob, the reentry. They did a report after a year. Haven't been back to prison. I finished my apprenticeship school through ABC. You know, so they don't offer any of these types of programs. You know, I spoke to the mayor, Ms. Mayor Dixon, about, you know, trying to get an apprenticeship school, you know, get the guys to come out, clean the streets and alleys first.
Right.
You know, work hard, but feed them good, keep them separated from the other inmates, put them through the GED, then put them into an apprenticeship school through the jail. She looked at me like I was out of my mind. You know, like, because jails are instituted, you know, for people just to be warehoused.
How old are you, Wallace?
I am a lovely 46 years old.
That's good age. That's good age.
And I'll be getting it into my, with DJ OG and my boy Ben, DJ Poe, you know, with the audio fusion. St. Patrick said, you all know me, you know. But it's just been very inspiring for me, you know. Some of the sisters, you know, they do look down at me because I dress nice, I smell nice, and I have a beautiful truck, I have a beautiful home, you know. You know, I never envisioned this. I come from a wonderful family, but I chose to go down the negative path. But through Dr. Clayton Able Foundation, you know, I've learned to walk that straight line.
Wallace, I think you raised, and I appreciate the call very deeply. I mean, I think that, I know Clayton Guyton very well. I mean, we have a series we did at Rose and Ashland for years when, before he started the Halfway House.
Yes,
we were doing a program on Rose Street, literally to kind of face off the gangs and create a safe place for young people to survive in those streets. And then Clayton started his Halfway House. And one of the things, this is one of the innovative things we can start doing. There are, I would say, dozens of people like Clayton Guyton around Baltimore City who don't have the support of Able Foundation. I think what Bob Embry is doing for Clayton Guyton, and I introduced Bob Embry to Clayton Guyton, is a very powerful thing and a very important thing.
Yes.
But it can't just be foundations that are doing it. This has to become public policy. This has to become the way we run our institutions. What we have to do is put halfway houses like Clayton runs for the 30, 40, 50 men that have come out of prison that he helps guide into a new world.
Mm-hmm.
Those houses have to be run by men and women who care about the streets, about the communities, about men and women coming out of prison all over this city to help people transition back into the world so that it doesn't become an anomaly that a Wallace goes to electrician school. It's so all the Wallaces and Jameses and Peters and Marys and whoever their names are end up going places where they can get employment. This country needs electricians. It needs machinists. It needs computer operators. Yeah. It needs all kinds of people to work to make the society hum. And that's what we have to begin doing. So what we have to convince our leaders is that the model that happened between the Able Foundation and Clayton Guyton has to become the way a system works. And it can work that way if we have – well, Wallace, we have to go into some other callers, but please stay in touch with us. I want to hear more about you, and I'll give Clayton a call and come down and visit.
That's what's up. He knows me as I'll say my last name, Wallace Edwards, electrician. If you speak to him, take my number, and if anything I can do to help, I'm here for the people. And one other thing, you know, I have done mentoring, you know, people have mentored to me, you know, some of the gang members. And I have inspired them to go into the military, get their G's, get education, don't smoke
blunt,
you know. And I see it in their eyes. They want to do good. They really do.
Wallace, I agree. We do have to go on the next callers, but if you want to hold on, a producer can pick up, get your phone number and or email address, and we can get back and forth together. And I appreciate you being part of this program.
Amen. I'll hold on.
Take care.
Unlimited minutes.
All right. 410-319-8888. Kwame, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark, and hi, Anthony.
Hey, Dr. Abiyami.
Good evening to you both, and best of the holy days. I'm sorry I wasn't able to catch the first portion of the program, so what I'm about to say may be redundant, but thank you both for hosting a show about this topic. I want to recommend a book called How America Became a Racist Nation by Ambrose I. Lane Sr. Ambrose has a program on WPFW called We Ourselves, but I used the book when I was teaching political science at Sabrina Douglas,
mm-hmm.
and it documents the legal and systemic policies that were implemented after the Civil War to indict a whole segment of the African-American community, particularly African-American males, with felony charges so that they could reduce their eligibility for jobs that would allow those persons from other groups to have access to those positions. Now, I want to point out that this is not new, and the whole point I'm making is this historic process is simply being repeated when we look at what happened with the more than 30,000 arrests and indictment or allegations placed against African-American males in this city, which have disqualified them under the Patriot Act 1 and 2. Under the Patriot Act, you no longer have to be convicted of a crime. You only have to be arrested to lose access to certain benefits. The second thing I wanted to say was several studies have been done which document the benefit, the interventional benefit of education within the prison system. For instance,
right.
every year of college gained by an inmate reduces their propensity to recidivism by 25%. Ergo, if an inmate gets a college education, he or she reduces their likelihood of recidivism by 100%. And the whole idea of bringing back education within the prison system, Dr. Freeman Hrabowski at UMBC, Jan Hubold at GBC Leadership,
right.
and myself, we worked for almost 3.5 years trying to stir up, mobilize this whole effort to bring education, college, GED, et cetera, back into the prison system of Maryland, because it would indeed make a significant impact on the recidivism rate. Again, I just wanted to bring those 2 points, and thank you both for having this conversation.
Thank you.
Kwame, thank you so much, and glad you're still hanging in there and working to make this a better place. 410-319-8888, Ann, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Ann, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I was calling. I have two little things to say is that for the prisoners, I do consulting for people, okay? And what I like to the people who come out of prison to do, start your own business. Like foreigners come to this country, they pay no taxes for 7 years. Whatever.
That's not true, by the way. That is a myth. I'm sorry, Ann. That's a complete myth.
Well,
that's not true. That's just not true.
Oh, well, okay, we know a little bit different. That
works. No, we don't know different. It's just not true.
Okay,
it doesn't happen.
Okay, you're saying it's not true. Okay, fine.
Yeah, right.
But they can start their own business. All these grants and money that's out here for you to have for minorities, it's strictly got to be a minority, a female, a black person, or female, okay? They can start those. All those dreams that got them in trouble in the first place, they can do better than that and get themselves together instead of always out there asking somebody to give them a job. Put your head together and start a business that you always wanted to do. My second pet peeve is this. I hear you guys talking, and the guy that came on earlier, and he was talking about how the black woman was ignoring him. I wish they'd get to TV people to stop playing up the white woman. Everywhere we look, you hardly see a black couple anywhere anymore. It's like you don't be successful unless you got a white woman on your arm. And black women don't be successful unless you got a white man. That's not true. The Baltimore Ravens have parties over here. A black woman cannot get a ticket to not a daggone one because the fathers who own the Ravens and all those investors and stuff, they make sure all their daughters go get the black millionaire. Soon as he gets in trouble, they dump him. Then he comes back to the black woman like, oh, well, I need a woman with me. No, we don't need you back after the leftover. You know,
okay.
And that's why we have a problem.
Thank you so much. Glad you're part of the show today.
Thank you.
Have a great Christmas.
Same to you.
410-319-8888. Ernest, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark.
Hi, Ernest.
Hey,
how you doing? Man, it's something that is being done right in this city. That's the Baltimore School for the Arts. The children that go to that school, when they graduated out of that school, when they graduate, they're professional in dance, art, music, and probably about 95% of them go to colleges, mm-hmm. conservatories, all over the United States. And in Baltimore City, that's working. You never hear about those. I mean, they come from all over. They come from the projects.
Yep.
They come from, I mean, they're poor kids, rich kids.
Yep.
All kids getting along together.
Black, white, Asian, Latino from every part of the city.
Yeah, it's black, white, Asian. I don't see that too many Asians down there when I was down there visiting and going to shows and things. I didn't see that many Asians, but it's open to Asians who audition.
It's open to anybody who can get in.
Yeah.
Right.
And to me, if this is working and it helps you, if you're doing music and arts like it, it helps your other side of the brain. It helps you to be cognizant of what's going on and things like that, even in your academics.
Mm-hmm.
So it improves academics. But see, they don't have a elementary school. They don't have a middle school that would, like, feed these kids. Now, I was reading in the New York Times the other day. The New York Times have about, I mean, New York City have about 5 school for the arts. And kids go all over auditioning to try.
Oh, I read that article. Yep.
You read that article?
Yep, yep.
But we only have one.
Hmm.
So, and you almost guaranteed that your child is going to get to college, and they're not going to be floundering. So, if this is working, why is it? I know people are behind the school for the arts. I was amazed because I thought private schools were the thing.
No, but I taught there for 10 years.
You taught, what did you teach there?
Acting.
And some of the greatest actors come out of there,
And I had...
And music, art, and all that. I mean, it's just amazing.
It's an amazing place. And I had a daughter who graduated from there in 1986.
Oh, yeah?
So...
Was she an actor or what?
She was in acting as well. But one of the things about School for the Arts is, as I told all my students when I taught there for those 10 years, is that of the 12, well, you said 12 of you in my class, I had the sophomores, just 12 students, the 12 of you in my class, maybe only 2 of you are going to end up making a career in acting.
Right.
Doesn't make any difference, because what these arts are preparing you to do is be disciplined in life and take your creative skills, whether you end up being a physician or a carpenter or a computer programmer or whatever it is you do in your life.
Right. That's correct also.
So I agree. I mean, because what happens is, the School for the Arts is an incredible institution.
It's incredible. They go to all the top colleges
in
the United States, and
right.
Everywhere you go is a person from the School for the Arts. That you did.
Right.
Did your daughter get that little ring? That's how they identify
right.
themselves. That little School for the Arts ring.
Right.
And the teachers are dedicated. You don't hear those teachers complaining. They're for the children, the principals, the people in charge.
I agree, Arzia. You're totally correct, and I think that one of the things that happens here is that what we have to do in Baltimore is not make that just one institution. You've got to have a lot of other institutions like that in the city. You've got to spread it out so it's not just in a elite institution, because 400 students, I think they only have about 400 and some students.
I think they can get a little more now because of the new building that they extended. I don't know how many children they get, but
it's small. But and honestly, I appreciate you being a part of the show, and I think that you're right. The School for the Arts is a great institution. We need to follow up on that. I mean, we need to follow up with more schools like that in this community.
Yeah,
and the arts need to be in more schools. So
yeah,
thank you so much.
The arts need to be in more schools because everybody's not going to be a basketball player or football player. So.
Okay, Ernest, thank you so much. Appreciate you being part of the show. 410-319-8888. Let's go to another caller here. Ricardo, you're on the air.
Yes, this is me, Ricardo. Yeah, I want to say I love your show.
Thank you.
The glass is half full. We're coming out of the nadir, and the last part we have to do is what the lady said. We have to now own businesses. We've got the electrician that was on. We've got programs. Let's have the church say to people, how many electricians do we have, and then open an electrician company where these companies can go out. We need conflict resolution in our schools, and I'm of the mind of thinking that if a person is smart enough to sell basically poison, that's a great mind for business. Look at what Jay-Z is doing. He has a great mind for business. Open up your businesses, and let's promote that. Did anybody hear me?
Yeah, we're listening.
Okay.
And this is what I'd like to see. Our kids, a lot of kids can't come to school because they have conflicts with someone, and they told them you better not come to school tomorrow. Let's let them have some conflict resolution so they can get to the schools, and then let's really go into that enterprise thing. You know, we need that badly.
Hmm. Ricardo, I appreciate the call. I think the issue of conflict resolution and helping kids get through their problems in schools is a real one.
And it works. I was watching on the public channel 77, the school system channel, Mark. They have kids on there that literally teach peer-to-peer how you resolve problems without resorting to violence. And it works. We have some brilliant students in the city of Baltimore. They just need opportunities. They just need options. And you know, and we've got to present them. We've got to do them. If we want our children to succeed, if we want our children to thrive, then we have to give them the tools to do that. And the way we do that, to his credit, is that we have to put people in charge. Like you said, it has to become policy,
right,
that we think out of the box, that we do it differently.
And you, and I think that starting businesses is a great idea, but everybody's not going to have their own business. I think that, and we—
That's a hard one.
It's a hard one. I mean, there are, for every business that starts, 9 fail. I mean, literally in small business, in this small business world, it's really difficult to do. But what people have to do is have skills so they can have a job that takes care of them. We have to have jobs in America that take care of people so that people can have a decent life. And we can do that. But it depends if we have the wherewithal. And our school system is beginning to turn. I mean, I think we have, you know, I've interviewed every superintendent in this city since 1993. And for the first time, I think there's somebody—
We've had a lot of them.
Had a lot of them. And now we have somebody who's dedicated to staying and turning things around. And I'm, you know, we'll critique and push, but we also support everything that he's doing and people are doing in our school system to make this the premier urban school system in the country. 410-319-8888. Mike, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, or evening, whatever it is. Look, I taught college at the Maryland House of Correction, and it was wonderful for that handful of students I could reach. Wonderful. All the reforms you're mentioning, I'm in favor of every damn one of them, but all of them are not enough. This society's got to be reorganized. If we want to get people out of prison, we have to... Now, this is going to be a hard one, but you say think imaginatively. We have to get rid of poverty. Poverty is not a human condition. It's a capitalist condition. And if you want capitalism, take the goddamn poverty.
Whoa.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't
you
say
have
that.
To, yeah, we get...
That was Andrew says. That wasn't me. I'm sorry. The point is, if you want to get rid of poverty, prisons, got to get rid of poverty. We don't need it.
I agree. I mean, I think that there has to be, this is built into our system. It's built into our way of existence, and we have to really rethink all we are going to do here in this society.
Amen, brother.
Good to hear you. And Anthony, good to have you on the show with us.
Great being with you all year, Mark. It's been awesome being with you.
And we have great Christmas Eve programming for you tomorrow night. So please tune in between 5 and 7 p.m. tomorrow. Ed Polacek will join us in the first hour, and the great Leah Gilmore in the second hour, bringing some great music and great conversation to help you on and to begin to celebrate Christmas Eve. And please join us for that. And Anthony McCarthy will be back on the air in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks. Mm-hmm.
Because the next couple of Fridays, it's going to be Christmas and New Year's.
And New Year's.
So we have a special program coming up here in WEA for those holidays for all your enjoyment. And so keep tuning in to 88.9 for that. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Producers Justin Levy, were engineered by Zachary Coleman, with help today from Richard Good. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, and Gay Pinder. Theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.